friends and family, welcome to the number one celebrant podcast you can find on X, the social network formerly known as Twitter. Not really to do with anything us that we've contributed, it's just that there's no one left on X now, so we can storm on in and just proclaim victory. It's like walking into an empty stadium and running the ball across the goal line. That is us. This is the Celebrant Talk Show. My name is Josh Withers, and joining me from her main studio, her primary studio in Melbourne, is Sarah Ed.
Okay, you're wrong.
Oh, really? You're not in your main studio?
No. Sorry. I am in my main studio. I think that you might be wrong about being the only Celebrant podcast on X.
Oh, no, I'm saying the best Celebrant podcast on X.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, the best.
Okay, sure.
You've just got to claim these things, Sarah. Fact checking is for the guys at the ABC. You and I, we're just here to have a good time. Okay, let's not worry about important things like facts or information.
Okay.
I think we can all agree that being correct doesn't matter anymore. Just ask Channel 7.
Yeah. Oh my God. Seriously, Channel 7. Mum just sent me a text saying this dude is going to sue them about the Bondi attacks because they, you know, identified this random person.
Yeah.
As you do. Like, seriously, have they learned nothing?
No, that they haven't learned anything. That's why they're getting sued. That's what happens.
It's also, like, I remember when this is way off topic, but I'm going to say it anyway. Remember the Boston Marathon bombing?
Yeah.
I was at my mum's house that night and we were watching the news unfold, and some news station had decided that it was this university student from Boston, wherever, and his picture was everywhere. And that's years ago, and it was so wrong. And how have we not learned from that?
Yeah. Look, we could do a whole podcast on the state of the media today, and just because I don't want to end up under the blessing of a Channel 7 producer, I won't.
And it's very fair,
Sarah.
Hello.
I wanted to address something early on in this episode. It has been, as you brought to my attention, just shy, 2 weeks shy of this being almost a year, well, 2 weeks shy of it being a year since we did the last podcast. And I just wanted to address why. For the last 23 years of my life, I've lived by the wise words of Slim Shady, Eminem, that everybody talk like they got something to say, but when they move the lips, nothing comes out, just a bunch of gibberish. And I didn't want to bother everyone with a bunch of gibberish. But we do have something to say today. So
that is a really fair point. We haven't had anything to say. Yeah. And I keep saying to myself, okay, so when the law changes and this new amendment comes in, we'll do a podcast recording, thinking that that was going to happen in February. It didn't. There's all these things that I'm like, when this happens, we'll do a recording then. Hasn't happened. So.
Well, this is an argument for doing regular podcasts, is that you just kind of, you know, we're like, as news breaks, we'll just do it in the next one. But it's been a bit of a year. You know, let's be honest, it's been a bit of a 4 years. But you know, we're just getting through. We're figuring it out, and so it is a pleasure to hear your dulcet tones in a set of headphones. And it's a pleasure to discuss the breaking and the non-breaking celebrant news with you today.
And really, what we want to discuss today is the state of the wedding industry.
Yeah, wild times out there.
But, you know, but actually I think, though, before we do that, I would just like to give an update on this bill, on this piece of legislation, because I've written about it, we've tweeted about it, we've put it on the Instagram, we've done all sorts of things, but there's still people out there in celebrant land who don't really know or understand what's going on, which is fine. I completely get it. So is it okay with you if I give an overview of that?
Yeah. But maybe if you could start with the words people should Google if they want an update, because I went to do it yesterday and I couldn't remember because it's a big, long bill.
It is. And I'm such a nerd that I actually made a shortcut on Safari to the actual page on the Parliament of Australia website about this bill. So I'm going right back to the beginning. When COVID started and we were locked in our houses, we started lobbying the Attorney General's Department, many of us, to allow us to witness signatures on notices of intended marriage via Zoom or other AV communication. I've got an email that I sent to them like in March 2020. So that's how long this has been going on. Because up until now, still, the Marriage Act says that the NOIM, the signatures on the NOIM must be, the NOIM must be signed in the presence of an authorised witness, which is a celebrant or a police officer or a lawyer or a doctor or a JP. In the presence of. There was a lot of argy-bargy at the time of COVID of what in the presence of actually meant. We wrote about it at the time. Mum told me, Mum's a lawyer, for those of you who don't know. Mum told me there's a lot of case law on in the presence of, meaning physical presence, not electronic presence. So, you know, we lobbied for a long time. And finally, at the end of 2021, after all the lockdowns were finished, we no longer really needed it, the Attorney General's Department put in place some COVID-era legislation, and one of the parts of that legislation was to allow for remote witnessing of notices of intended marriage. So it said, under the electronic observation of the authorised witness, which meant we could do it on, you know, Zoom or Skype or FaceTime or whatever you want. And that was for a year when it was first put in place. The end of 2022, it was extended for another year, but we knew that given this was very much COVID legislation, like the actual bill was, you know, COVID measures, we knew it was going to run out. So at the end of 2023, we knew that that legislation was going away and it wasn't coming back. We started lobbying in 2022 to have this extended. Obviously, what they did was to extend that COVID legislation rather than to change the Marriage Act. So we started lobbying at the start of last year to have the Marriage Act changed to make this permanent. We did a survey in 2022. We've got like 100 responses of people going, this is so useful for my business. Let me explain to you how much money and time I'm saving by not having to drive all around the country to get NOIM signed. I'm able to spend more time with my family because I'm not spending so much time on the road, you know, yada, yada. So, we used all of that. And in, I'm going to say September, October last year, the Attorney General's Department contacted those of us who are in the associations and networks group that meets twice a year to say, hey, we're all over it. We're going to make this this big portfolio bill, like it's called an omnibus bill, which will have non-controversial amendments to multiple pieces of legislation in it. And because they're not, this was in October, because they're not very controversial, we think it's going to get through Parliament pretty quickly because, like, you know, it's not a big deal. So I've written quite a lot about it on the Celebrant Institute website, and a lot of those articles are available for everyone to read, not just for members. We might put some links in the show notes, Josh, if that's okay. So the bill went to Parliament in November, the middle of November, and the House of Reps recommended that there be an inquiry on it and that, you know, different bodies be invited to put in submissions about what they thought about the amendments in this bill, blah, blah, blah. We were the only celebrant group to make a submission, and I'm pretty pleased with the submission that we wrote, and I was pleased to see it actually mentioned in some of the committee papers that came out of the reports that came out of that committee. It seems, though, that there is actually a quite controversial change in this omnibus bill, not to the Marriage Act, but to the Native Title Act. And there is a bit of a concern that it might not actually pass through the Senate at all because of this one issue. So the problem with an omnibus bill is that there are lots of changes to lots of different pieces of legislation. And if one of those changes is controversial, it holds up everything else. So the committee that did the inquiry, they reported on the 1st of February. And they were like, basically, they were like, pass the bill. We think it's good. It's fine. No dramas. One person said, yeah, got a bit of a problem with this no title bill. And then it went to the Senate on the 8th of February. And there it still sits. So it's been on the Senate business every sitting day since the 8th of February. I don't know if you've ever looked at the Parliament sitting calendar, but they don't actually sit very often. They're much more often out in their electorates doing their thing, which is fine, and I get it.
Oh, you know, that's totally what they're doing. They're just out there just fixing potholes and planting trees. So they're doing God's work.
So in March, I spent 2 weeks, the 2 weeks before Easter, watching the Senate live feed every day because that's how exciting my life is. But it's also how much I care about these amendments and making sure that you all get the news as soon as it happens. So I sat there watching it. Quite frankly, I was disgusted by the way the Senate is run. They maybe get an hour and a half to 2 hours a day of working on actual legislation, and the rest of the time is like two-minute statements. And then on one day they have longer statements, and then they have questions, and then they have answers to the questions. They spent one entire day where every senator stood up and made a tribute to a senator who had recently died, which is awful and very sad, but they did that for 4.5 hours, and then they adjourned for the rest of the day in her honour, which doesn't feel like a very good use of taxpayers' money to me, quite frankly. Anyway, they didn't get to the bill by the time they went on leave for Easter. The next sitting week starts on the 14th of May, and that's budget week. I can't imagine they're going to get to this bill in budget week either, because it's just not very important. So it's annoying and frustrating. I am seeing in celebrant groups a lot of, I wish the AG would just let us go back to remote witnessing. You need to understand that the AG doesn't have power to actually make legislation. It needs to go through Parliament. So we're waiting for Parliament to make a decision on this. And that decision could get caught up because of the rest of what's in this omnibus bill. So I don't see this bill passing until the second half of the year, if it does at all, which worries me quite a lot. It's just a matter of waiting. So remote witnessing of NOIMS stopped on the 31st of December. We are no longer able to do that because the piece of legislation that did allow us to do that no longer exists or expired on the 31st of December. So make sure that you are not remote witnessing NOIMS. You still can receive NOIMS electronically and receive and cite identity documents electronically. The fact sheet that allows us to do that came out in June 2019. That was not connected to COVID at all. So that working in an online environment fact sheet, that's still in place because that was about applying the Electronic Transactions Act to the Marriage Act. It wasn't about actually making any changes to the Marriage Act. So that stuff's still in place. You can still do that. You just can't witness signatures electronically. You have to be in the same place as people to witness their signatures or send them to a police station or to a JP or whatever. So that really is where it's up to. It is very annoying. I have written to MLCS and suggested that we start working on maybe some targeted consultation of the new guidelines because obviously they're waiting for this bill to pass before they release the new guidelines to us. But if we have to wait for the bill to pass and then them go out be rewritten and then them go to consultation, it's all going to take a long time. So I've suggested that maybe a version of the guidelines that says, you know, it's got whatever the current thing is about witnessing in the presence of, and then like a statement that says, if the Attorney General's miscellaneous portfolio bill goes through, yada, yada, this is what this section will say. Like, it will be replaced with this. So I'm hoping that that might happen soon. If you are wanting to Google to find out where things are up to, the name of this bill is the Attorney General's Portfolio Miscellaneous Measures Bill 2023, which is a very long and boring title. Yeah, but basically nothing's going on. So I will keep you updated, I promise.
A couple of observations on this whole thing.
Yeah.
One, I love how such a simple thing is so complicated.
Yeah.
Two, I love how in your perfect attempts of simplifying such a complex thing, I think it still just remains complex.
Yeah, totally.
it's possible that it can't be made more simple. And finally, I'm bewildered. I know that there's just systems and processes, and you and I, we've been in the building talking to the awesome staff at AGD about this, and it's just when you call the marriage law and celibate section of the Attorney General's office and you talk to those people are good and lovely. They're part of a massive machine that is the Attorney General's office, much bigger office than I ever imagined, just between you and me. I thought it'd be more of a kind of a, you know, like a local law firm kind of operation, a couple of guys, you know, like three or four desks inside. But turns out it's an entire building.
Yeah.
And so they're part of a system where this is just how it works, apparently. And I don't know whether it could have worked a better way. God, I hope there might have been an opportunity for it to happen a better way. And we're in Canberra in a month, is it?
Just over a month. May.
And I'm guessing at that point we'll hear more beautiful stories of how such simple things are being made so complex. So that'll be lovely.
Yeah. I didn't even talk about what the actual amendments are, so it could have been even more complex.
Yeah, gosh.
Yeah, no. Just go and read my article about it.
Yeah, we'll put links in the show notes.
Yeah. So that's what is happening with that. And, you know, we hope that there will be news sooner rather than later, but don't hold your breath because you might die.
Well, yeah, and look, also just don't hold your breath for a multitude of reasons. A good celebrant isn't a live celebrant.
Yes.
That's what we always say. I think that's the first page of the Cert IV, isn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. Make sure you're alive. It's the best way to be.
Talking about being alive, can we just have a chat about the state of the wedding industry today? Because it is a wild and weird time to be in the wedding industry. And I thought I'd try and set the stage. Because I feel like we've all been on the same journey, but maybe some people maybe just want to be reminded of the fact that just over 4 years ago, there was this whole pandemic thing where they severely limited – well, A, they regulated limitation, but then they also advised limitation. So those two things together resulted in a lot of limitation in gathering of people and travel. Two bedrock parts of the wedding issue, the wedding industry, the gathering of humans, and then often whether it's a vendor traveling or whether it's mum traveling from Canada, whatnot. And so I feel like everyone listening to this podcast is probably well aware of the fact that the pandemic occurred. And
it had
the impact that it had, which was the impact that we all experienced. And I wanted to talk to that just for a half second because I wanted to give everyone here permission to feel hurt by that and to grieve that, and then also to hopefully forgive. It's funny, I've talked to you about this, Sarah, how I've had to go through a forgiveness period of just basically forgiving everyone globally, government and everyone for COVID, which seems like a really silly thing to do, but it was like a mental exercise I had to go through to kind of get over it. because I hadn't gotten over it. I was kind of hung up on it. And so that happened. So that COVID is what COVID is, which is what it was, and that's great. Here in April 2024, we're now experiencing 2.5 other things. I'll start with the 0.5. The 0.5 is that we no longer live in the low interest rate policy times of the last 10, 15 years where interest rates were close to zero and everyone was just living large and living on credit and businesses were booming because they could borrow money, which money was basically free. And so grandiose, beautiful, amazing times where lots of stupid things happened. And so that period has ended. Interest rates are now up at a normal – well, what I think old people would call normal rates. Young people would be like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm paying 6% interest. And the old people are like, oh, yeah, that's really low considering what we used to pay.
Yeah.
So the LERP time, which I just thought that's a fun acronym, LERP, low interest rate policy. The times of LERP have ended. That's the 0.5. The other two is that with the low interest rate policy ending and coming out of COVID and all the measures that different governments took to try and support business and industry and people through COVID, we've experienced great inflation activity. I don't know if anyone's tried to buy a bloody beer or a coffee in the last couple of months, but boy, have those things gone up in price. So inflation is having its way, which is resulting in a cost of living crisis. So those are real things which are affecting the wedding industry, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on how those are, how the industry is reacting to those. But the other angle, which not a lot of people have thought about, and I found out actually through, and I'll give full credit to the Wedco podcast, which is a Gold Coast, Southeast Queensland-based podcast, interviewing wedding vendors, and they were interviewing an old man of mine, Shane Shepherd. Fun tip, Shane Shepherd and I, we did our first wedding expo right next to each other. And yeah, and then it was like a million years ago. We're just kids. And look at us now. We look at old haggardy men that have 400 kids. And Shane had read a really interesting article in the New York Times about the engagement gap. And that's just a fancy term for the fact that through COVID, 2020-2021, because as much as we humans like to think that we're precious little snowflakes that are very unique and special, it also turns out there's a lot of patterns in our lives, and there's broad assumptions you can make about a population generally each year. And so each year, a certain number, give or take us a bit of an error percentage, a certain number of people meet and they get together and they they get together. This is what I'm trying to say. Every year, a certain number get together. Through COVID, because we weren't meeting, we weren't kind of going to workplaces, we weren't going to bars, we weren't meeting with friends, we weren't having birthday parties, all that kind of thing. Those people didn't meet, and because they didn't meet, they didn't get together, and because they didn't get together. Because out of all the people that kind of meet and get together, a portion of them, I actually don't know how many, but a portion of them kind of bed in for like, we are having an adult life together, we're going to kind of go the long term. And those people, they didn't get engaged. And because they didn't get engaged, they didn't get engagement rings, they didn't buy the diamond rings, and they're not planning weddings. So as along with the cost of living crisis and the low interest rate policy ending and inflation having its way, and also just post-COVID, the atmosphere is different. Also, people didn't meet and didn't get engaged and aren't having weddings. And so it is just one hell of a time to be in the wedding industry, hey?
Totally. And I'm just looking at the article that you wrote about this at the time that the New York Times article came out. And Signet, who is a jewelry distributor or shop, you know, sales place in America, their figures say that 2.8 million engagements occurred in 2021 in the US, down to 2.1 million in 2023, which, you know, like, it doesn't sound like it's still a lot of people getting engaged, but that's a significant drop. Like 700,000 less, that's like a third. No, it's like it's 25% less couples got engaged in 2023 than got engaged in 2021. And that's like 25% is a lot.
I'm going to be interested to see all of those numbers, the numbers that particularly you love. And it won't be until the end of 2025, even 2026, and we start to see some of these numbers, because obviously through COVID, a lot of divorces as well, because people were their relationship was brought to a level of pressure that relationship couldn't handle or take. So, yeah, like just wild waters as far as relationships over the last 4 years. And those diamond numbers are mind-blowing. Also, I sent it to you the other day. If you go to Google News, and in Google News you can search for news topics, you can do it. You can say it's restricted to the last year. If you go to Google News and search for jeweler shutdown or something like that, around the world, jewelers are shutting down left, right, and center. Even here in Australia, Michael Hill shut down 7 stores. Wild times.
Yeah, and I think it's something that before you raised it with me, David Schneider, who runs an elopement business here in, or registry weddings business here in Melbourne, he'd raised it with me as well. And I think it's just a really interesting point. And I think it will be interesting to see, you know, kind of over the next 10 years, what the marriage numbers do. So, you know, obviously in 2020 and 2021, we saw a dip. In 2022, we saw a massive uptick because all those couples who couldn't get married because they were in lockdown in 2021 got married in 2022. And that's sort of that's the last set of numbers we've got. So I think it's going to be really interesting, not just over the next, you know, 2 to 5 years, but over the next 10 years to see, is there a decrease from pre-COVID numbers? Is the marriage rate trending down in general? Will there be an uptick again in, say, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, after we're kind of back to normal, if that's a thing, which is not really. But another thing that I thought was interesting was I was talking to a friend last night, Alison Pickle, a Sydney celebrant, and she's had quite a few inquiries recently where one person is in Australia and one person is overseas and they're coming here to get married. And she said she's had more of those recently than she has in a long time. I wonder if there was more online meeting during those times when we were at home and you couldn't go out to meet people. Did people broaden their interactions with people from around the world?
That's really interesting, because if you kind of mirror that to corporate world, like employment, how we work for companies and who we work for, that changed through COVID, you know, because of remote working. And many companies, I know I was listening to a podcast with the CEO and co-founder of Dropbox. And through COVID, I think early COVID, like April, May, they made the decision to say, not only are we going to work from home, but that's the normal thing through 2020, but let's actually completely up, like they've completely changed the entire way they do business. And so now if there's the perfect employee for Dropbox and they live in, you know, in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, cool, well, you can work for Dropbox. That's great. Whereas before, well, you either had to move to San Francisco or already live in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. And I unfortunately the marriage stats aren't going to tell us that anymore, because they used to the marriage statistics used to report on all sorts of interesting things, and one of those things was country of birth, whether the couple were born in Australia, whether one of them was born in Australia and one overseas, or whether both were born overseas. Unfortunately, the funding for the marriage and divorce statistics was significantly reduced last year. So the types of data that we're getting is now significantly reduced. So they no longer, for example, report on what proportion of marriages were civil versus religious. You can pay them to do that, that analysis for you, starting at $650. but yeah, it's not going to be on their regular thing anymore. And just looking at the 2022 data, that country of birth thing isn't there anymore either. That would have been a really interesting thing to map that over time. But hey, what can you do?
Okay, come end of 2025, maybe even 2026. I'd be interested even footing the bill for that and say, like, can we can we have a look at kind of like 29, I don't know, take into account trends pre-2020 and just like, can we, like, what are we seeing in the data 2020 through, say, 2024, 2025?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we will think about that at the end of next year. Look, there's so many things in the marriage stats that I find utterly fascinating. I'm just going off on a tangent here to tell you about something else that I found in the statistics that I found really interesting. I was writing an article for my blog about the gender and sex questions on the NOIM and when they changed. So in 2017, when marriage equality came out, they introduced two new questions on the NOIM, the description of parties, bride, groom or partner, and in 2017, it was called sex, and the choice was male, female, or X. In 2021, that item changed to gender, male, female, or non-binary, and it is now optional. When the options were male, female, or X, the statistics for those years say we have not reported on marriages where one or both parties chose X as their sex because there's too few of them, and because there's so few of them, it's possible that the parties will be identifiable. As soon as we changed over, so obviously 2022 is the first full year that we've got that data with non-binary, now they're reporting on it because we've got enough numbers. And I'm fascinated whether that was a change from people going, I don't like X, that doesn't work for me, to, but non-binary is okay, or if the non-binary term is just, you know, we know in kind of popular in the world, it's become more common for people to feel comfortable identifying as non-binary and being open about that. And has that reflected through onto the marriage forms? I found that utterly fascinating, and I'll be interested to see what happens with that over the next few years. There you go. There's me being weirdly fascinated about weird things, but love it.
As the punters say, the numbers never lie.
This is true. So we know that the, and I think, Josh, it's also worth noting that the wedding industry is in trouble in the whole world. This is not an Australian-centric thing. I'm in a Facebook group with majority English celebrants. Now, in England, you can't get legally married by a celebrant. You get legally married by the registrar, but then there's a whole movement of independent celebrants who are creating personalised and meaningful ceremonies, and they are trying to get those legalised. They're working on it.
It's, we're going through Parliament. Like, I saw a speech in Parliament in the UK, like, in the last week or two, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's, I mean, but it's been going through Parliament for a few years. So, and we know how that works here. So let's not hold our breath for there either. But there's a celebrant in there who is very well renowned, and she's, you know, a full-time celebrant. And she was bemoaning the fact the other day that she's had 7 cancellations for June. And of course that's their summer. And because they can't afford it. People are writing to her and saying, we've decided not to get married. We can't afford to. So we're cancelling. So we know it's happening in England. And Josh, you've been talking to your mates in North America.
Yeah. Throughout North America, there's particularly through the less, well, I'll just say it, not LA. through the normal parts of America. A lot of my friends through Canada, they're experiencing major downturns. And which is really hard for all of us to handle, because last year was a bumper year and this year hasn't continued that. So, yeah, there's definitely a global element to it. Are you on the TikTok, Sarah?
No.
I aged myself by calling it the TikTok. Yeah. But I'm happy to talk about this later as a response to all of this, but I've been trying to get in front of the camera and create content. Yeah, a la Instagram Reels, TikTok. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to talk about that in a response in a second. But I posted so I realized that not a lot of people had read my article on the Celebrant Institute, because it's just for the Celebrant Institute and it's for celebrants. And hopefully everyone listened to this read the article, but wedding photographers and whatnot hadn't. And so I saw a friend who was like laying awake at night stressing about how to provide for his family because inquiries and bookings are so down. I'm like, oh, I haven't really said much about this outside of the Celebrant Institute, kind of world. So I recorded a little video basically just saying everything we've just said. And I posted on Instagram where all the wedding vendors are like, thanks for saying this. You know, like, it's good to know we're not alone. I also posted it on TikTok. Word of advice, don't post anything on TikTok. it's a cesspool of evil. But
what happened?
Well, so I'm not getting wedding vendors on TikTok. I've gotten, I guess, what you call normies, you know, just regular people. So the first comments I got, I thought, this guy's having a bit of fun. He goes, does this mean your prices are going to be half price? You know, because obviously when business is tough, everyone knows, loves a good sale. And I said, better, they're going to be more expensive because we've got to feed our families on less work. But that was a funny little thing. But that's begun a large train of people. Jesus and the 12 Ebola, that's a username, said that I'm shooting myself in the foot if that's what's actually happening. Nick's personal ex says that weddings are just unrealistic and the cost of living right now. That could be a house deposit. Lots of people mentioning house deposits. A Volvo lover wants me to know that plenty of young couples want to get married, but they can't afford it. Elsa's eloping on Bali because it's half the price they met in 2020. So a lot of people talking about the cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
And I suppose lots of people saying lots of other things. God bless them. But I wanted to share, I guess, a status of my business. And I'm not talking I'm just talking about my business. So just so if this isn't your experience or anyone listening, then that's okay. But my experience has been that inquiries are way down. And Britt said, well, I think it's time to drop the price. And I said, I don't think it's a pricing. People that actually do inquire, they're booking. If I was getting 10 inquiries a day, none were booking, then I'd say, yeah, cool. Maybe we've got to readjust things from a product point of view. But anyone that inquires books, and I may be getting one inquiry every week or two at the moment, it's wild out there. Now, this is also
You contextualize that?
Yeah, pre-COVID, like back in the glory days, like average of 5 to 10 inquiries a day, and not all of them were booked because I was kind of casting a wide net and very few of the fish would be my fish. Then after COVID, I took the year off, went overseas, and basically I didn't shut the business down. I just stopped taking bookings. So all of the momentum was lost. And then I've come back from COVID. Came back from overseas after COVID, went back home to the Gold Coast because that's where we're from. And we've realized we don't want to live on the Gold Coast, so we've actually moved to Hobart. We're actually half an hour outside of Hobart. And so I've lost all the momentum from doing all the work through COVID. I went down to zero bookings, which was so glorious. I can tell you, one of the nicest things I felt in the longest time was to have zero couples on my books. It was a weird feeling that no one wanted anything of me. And so we've come back, and then I've also changed region. And so just from an SEO point of view and also from a brand awareness in the local market point of view, I've just really all the momentum's lost. And so I'm working double time to build that momentum back up because celebrancy puts a roof over my family's head. So that's some context to that. But I did want to say where I am having success. And where I am having success is in elopements with the Elopement Collective, also elopements just with by myself. Also the really stupid high end. So almost all the booking, all but two of the bookings I've received this year have been for international weddings where they're spending big money and they want to have – they obviously want me and they want to go to Italy or they want to go to Fiji or Bali or New Zealand, and they're spending big money but they're not spending the 50, 60 grand a wedding, but they might be spending 10 grand on a very awesome elopement. And then the other bookings have been I'm actually curious what your kind of percentage is as far as local weddings for you. I barely ever get wedding planner weddings. Normally Jack and Jill reach out and say, hey, will you be our celebrant? I'll rock out. Maybe they've got like a wedding planner. They've got a wedding stylist who's kind of like acting as a bit of a planner, but they're not really employed as one. Because the typical thing in America, you just have a wedding planner. It's not so typical in Australia, but of the bookings I've got this year, they're the big ones overseas or the local ones that have got a wedding planner, And so they're big dollar ones. Those things, those babies are booking left, right, and center. Left, right, and center compared to zero. So, yeah, they're one every week or two, which is, I've got to be honest with you, it's dire out there.
I think are a bit different from the normal wedding industry person because of those things that you talked about. You had a year off and then you moved markets. So you're not kind of back to business as usual. You're almost starting again. One of our friends, Roxy, a celebrant in Brisbane, and I'm sure she will not mind me talking about this because she posted it publicly on her Instagram. She's somebody who is business as usual. She's working in the same market she's always worked in. She hasn't had a year off, so she hasn't lost momentum. She's, all the normal marketing things that she's done, she's still doing those. Her bookings are down 15%. 15%, that's quite a lot. And those who are booking are choosing her cheaper package rather than her more expensive one. So her bookings are down and she's making less money on each booking. Her bookings for emceeing are down by 50%. And so I think that, that's somebody who's doing all the same things they've always done and they're still having trouble.
Yeah. So, and Roxy's actually like active and good on social.
She's so good on social.
Like one of the things I wanted to talk about is that a lot of us, I'll say just me. And if this is you, put your hand up in your own car and you can identify as this. A lot of us were kind of like riding on momentum and like, I'm on all the vendor lists and I kind of, I had enough momentum that I kind of get enough bookings without really trying and without really putting our effort into social and advertising. And that was me. Pre-COVID, I just kind of existed and that was enough for my family. And I'm sure there's many people listening who are on similar ground. But Roxy's, like, she puts her back into it. Like she's making content. I can't really count. I'm not counting. But like,
she's so good.
I feel like she's doing at least daily stuff, if not more.
She's so good. And so I think it's an interesting perspective to show that even someone who's doing all the things those things that were working before is somebody like that even is struggling. In terms of my work, funerals have even been quiet this year, which is quite interesting. Some funeral directors are like, oh, we're swept off our feet, but other funeral directors are like, we're so quiet. Or they're doing a lot of no-service cremations. So people are having their loved one cremated, but they're not having a funeral. Or they're not having a funeral through the funeral director because they might be able to do it cheaper on their own. So that's quite interesting. I'm spending a lot of time on my website, trying to get my website to rank better on Google. And to do that, I'm writing blog posts about everything under the sun. I thought I was going to struggle to come up with 60 topics and I hit 179 the other day. I haven't written 179 posts yet. I've written like 90 blog posts in the last couple of months. And that's that long-term strategy of hoping that will increase my SEO and get me ranking better on Google organically. Who knows whether or not it'll work, but that's my aim. That's what I'm doing at the moment. And I'm also, trying to think outside the square about other ways that I can get work or attract work. For example, I was writing an article, a blog post yesterday about alternatives to regular burial and cremation. And one of the things I was writing about was donating your body to science. And in my research for that, Melbourne Uni runs the only body donor program in Victoria, and they farm the bodies out to the other universities that need them. But they annually, they run a commemorative ceremony to thank the donors who have given their bodies to science. And they invite the friends and families of those donors along. And so I wrote to them and said, if you need a celebrant to help with running this ceremony, I'd love to put my hand up, because that's another way of getting my face out there. They might not need me. They might already have a celebrant. They might do it with a priest. Who knows? Whatever it is. But it's just those, like, what else can I do to get my face and my name out there to potentially then go, oh, by the way, I also do X, Y, and Z.
I'm kind of disappointed, Sarah. Like, I thought the instant thing that you could have gone for was pet weddings. Why are you doing pet weddings?
No.
Even to go off local news stories, yeah, was it magpie and pitbull? Was it a pitbull? Yeah. Magpie pitbull weddings.
No.
I mean, I'm going to Google it now. Magpie.
What's
pitbull,
I think it's Molly
wedding,
the magpie.
Celebrate. Well, no, like,
in Queensland.
Just, you can't build a whole business of one couple.
All right. Okay. sure.
Oh my gosh. There's a magpiewedding.com.
Of course there is.
Who's Magpie Wedding? This is
why?
So good.
But no, why?
I think that's the brand. I think there's a magpie eco wedding planner. Oh my gosh, this is a whole thing. It's like a eco weddings. Is it Australian? I don't know.
They've got a directory. No, surely this is not.
Oh my gosh, what's Magpie? Where's the about? I need to know all about Magpie Weddings.
They're in the UK. They were the Vintage Wedding Fair.
Now
they're Magpie Wedding.
Do they have magpies in England? Is that?
I'm sure they do. I don't really understand the brand, but okay.
Yep, no, they are. The magpies are common in Britain. All right, well, okay, well, you know, maybe Magpie Weddings are taken, you know, but there's other opportunities there.
Oh, dear. And I'm also, you know, working on continuing to work on my training products. I now have between 4 and 6 students, new students start the cert for every 4 weeks, which is really cool. And they continue to find us on Google, thanks to the excellent work that Josh has done in that area. Yeah, but it's hard. You know, it's hard. I know all sorts of people who are talking about going back to work, who are talking about getting jobs, and I think that's a bit sad, but it's necessary. Yeah.
I've been trying to do what you're talking about, doing website content. I'm actually, like, I feel like I've been helping you just via text messages. You have questions. I'm like, I should probably do this myself. Like, every time Sarah asks me a question, I should try and do a Josh version of that, because I haven't been. But I am trying to create social content. And I suppose if I wanted to leave anyone with a bit of an action point today, is that this, like, it may well be that the wedding industry is changing forever. You and I will find out at the same time as it happens in the next, you know, over the coming months. But people will still get married, and in Australia they still need a celebrant, unless they go to a church. And so our role it's not extinguished, but maybe it's changed. And so it's such a powerful time for you to do you, for you to be the you that you are, because everyone else sucks at being you. You're the best person at being you. And that's a powerful place for a content creator, whether we're talking about Instagram Reels, TikTok videos, blogging, all those places where you get to kind of put yourself out there. It's an amazing place for you to be you. And when I say be you, I don't just mean get out there and say, oh, I like the Foo Fighters and Biscuits. Which is, honestly, it's a pretty positive sell for a celebrant. But you've got beliefs and methods and processes that are unique to you and how you create weddings and marriage celebrations and elopements and funerals and pet funerals and pet weddings and magpie and bulldog weddings and the whole thing. And you, because you, like, you might not think you're unique, but you are. Without even knowing who you are, because I'm obviously speaking to a microphone and recording an MP3, so I'm not even like. But if you can hear this voice, you have a unique way of doing what you do, and so it might be that you need coaching to try and find that out, to figure that out, to kind of identify what makes you unique. Or you might just know. It's such a great opportunity to kind of distill that down, as Sarah's done, make a list of things. Like, I know for me, I'd talk about rehearsals, vows, you know, scripts. They're three things off the top of my head. And from those three things, you could probably pull another 30 topics. Sit down and make the content.
It's amazing how granular the things people ask about on Google are. So, for example, how can I involve mum in the wedding? Like, that's how, you know, so I will write a blog post about how to involve parents in weddings. That's how granular it is. So I'm writing about every tiny thing, and I'm finding it quite fun, actually, to write down all the things that I know about weddings. I know a lot more than I thought I did, and funerals.
What do you think is the most you thing that you've written about so far?
Well, I'm doing a big series on the legals because I figure I've got all this content that's for celebrants, but it's really like a, you know, the vast majority of couples don't really understand the legal stuff, why we collect the information that we do and blah, blah, blah. So I've been writing a lot about that from the couple's perspective and, you know, why it's important that your parents' names are right and those sorts of things. But I'm, you know, I'm writing it the way I speak and the way I engage with people. You know, a lot of I've had people say to me, oh, just use AI to, you know, write something for you. I tried that and it didn't sound like me, and I couldn't even rewrite it to make it sound like me. So it took me longer to rewrite it to sound like me than just to write it in the first place. So, yeah, I'm just really enjoying that process of writing down all the things that I know. Yeah.
And that's all it is. So if you're sitting there wondering, like, how to actually go about doing the content making, it's just all the things that are inside of you, all the that knowledge, that wisdom, those experiences. I know something that I've been trying to do is as I walk away from a wedding or an elopement or a ceremony, or I think about other weddings and whatnot that I've done, I try to reflect on the event and what were some lessons that were learned, what were some mistakes, sounds like a judgment kind of, but you know, like what are things we could take away from this? And then if it's honorable to the people, and maybe if you got permission, if you got photos or video, maybe you can mention like, hey, at Jack and Jill's wedding, they did this and it was awesome. So maybe, you know, that is a good piece. But if it isn't honorable, or if it isn't nice, maybe, you know, you kind of very much generalize it, like, hey, if you were happening to do this, it's stupid, you know. Yeah, so yeah,
I think that wisdom. And I'm trying very hard in my blog posts, and this is how I teach as well, is to talk about this is the way I do it, and these are the reasons why I do it this way. I'm not saying that anybody else's way is bad, but this is the way I choose to do whatever it is, and these are the reasons. And I think that that's another important thing, is that it can be very easy to get into, oh, I saw this celebrant do this thing and it was awful, and don't do that because it's terrible. Or, you know, this ridiculous couple who wore this stupid outfit and that was really dumb. I think it's important to try to avoid that negative marketing and come more from a place of, well, this is what I choose. And, you know, it's okay that other people do things differently. That's one of the beautiful things about the celebrant industry in Australia, is that there is a celebrant for every couple and a couple for every celebrant. And, you know, this is the decision-making path that I have used to get to the point that I'm at now, and this is why I do it this way.
Yeah,
that's working for me anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's good advice. And all of that wisdom, that's such a beautiful thing to share with people when they're trying to figure out which is the best celebrant for me. When you can not just prove yourself as an expert, because you are, but also as someone with a certain vibe. Like I am, I had a couple who didn't choose me recently, and I said to the wedding planner, because I was through a wedding planner, I said, hey, just give me some feedback. I'm in Tasmania, I'm new to Tassie. What's the price thing? And she said, no, she said they actually found it really hard. They interviewed two celebrants. They loved both of you. The other celebrant was $100 more than you, and they chose them just based on a process thing, just one of their ceremony creation processes. And she said, it's not even a negative on you. They're just like, there's two of these beautiful things we want, and, I guess we'll choose that one. I found that encouraging, but also just an encouragement to everyone listening. It's not always price. Yes, sometimes price does come into it, and God bless those people. My favorite thing for people to say is, I'm on a budget. I'm like, oh, yeah, everyone's on a budget, man. Yeah. Like Rupert Murdoch's on a budget. Anyway.
And I think that's actually a really important point about process, and this is something that I talk about with celebrants a lot when I'm teaching about kind of that client journey stuff. So, for example, written questionnaires versus interview to gather information for the ceremony. I personally use written questionnaires to get information about the couple's story because when I started and I tried asking people in meetings, it didn't work for me. I'm not really sure. When I sent them a questionnaire, I found that having given them the time to think about it, I got much richer responses. Whereas I know other celebrants who are like, nah, can't deal with written questionnaires. I've got to ask them. I've got to hear the response for it to be in my body for me to be able to write it.
Which is me, by the way.
Yeah. So I think that that's an important thing to tell a couple before they book you. Oh, I'll send you a questionnaire or I'll interview you, because some couples might be like, I'm really nervous and I don't want to talk about this with somebody. So a written thing is going to work better for me. So that kind of process thing can be a reason that somebody chooses you or doesn't choose you. And I think that being open about those things from, your sales meetings, I think that's really important to give people the full understanding of how you work. The same thing with drafts or no drafts. I always send a draft. I tell them that in the sales meeting. Some people don't send drafts. I would hope that they are open about that in the sales meeting so that the couple doesn't go, well, where's my draft? Because other people have talked to them about sending drafts. So, and I think that that's you're selling.
You're selling your journey, if I can. You're selling
that's right, and your journey.
Yeah, and the entire thing from the sales meeting is part of what you're selling. This is the taster. This is the ice cream tasting. Okay, taste the ice cream before I get the whole thing. That's what the sales meeting is, and you're selling this entire journey. And it's good to highlight elements of that that might be a bit different. If part of your sales journey is that we play strip poker one night, probably worth letting everyone know,
in case they don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not. Because a lot of people hear this and they start thinking about, well, I do this way and that's good or it's bad. And it's not about being good or bad. It's just how you do it. And yeah. How you do it is part of your value. It's part of your value statement. It's part of what makes you you. And so be proud. My process is X. And if you feel you need to, you might need to give context. My process is X. Other processes might be Y. Other celebrants might be Y. But you don't feel like you need to excuse yourself or apologize for how you are. If it provides context and understanding, it might be helpful. But generally, don't feel like you need to apologize for who you are and how you do things, because how you do things are amazing.
You also don't need to be negative about the other processes that you don't do. So, for example, when I talk about the fact that I send a draft, I know some other celebrants don't send a draft, and that's okay for them, but I would be too nervous not to do that. It's not about saying, if you don't send a draft, I might get the details wrong, so I've got to, of course. It's about me. It's not about, for me, my selling points are about me and how I operate, not about, I don't like the way other people operate, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. That's been a rambling conversation, Mr. Withers.
I hope it was encouraging. I hope it was a blessing for people, because I know people are hurting out there, and it's just all
strange.
It's a, you know what? It's a strange old time to be on planet Earth with everything that is going on politically, culturally, just even criminally, I don't know if that's a word, but yeah, just all the things going on. It's just a wild time to be alive on planet Earth. And I know you and I don't have all the answers, but I hope that in our role as the people behind the Celebrant Institute, whether it's through the website, our blog, the podcast, our emails, even just the celebrant.institute/ask, whatever it might be, that we could just try and offer a bit of a cool glass of water in the middle of the desert kind of vibe. Maybe it can be a bit of a blessing.
Totally.
Sarah, always a pleasure to talk to you. I don't think we've got anything else to offer in the podcast because we
not
have.
Not today. I think we're done.
I think we've made a whole podcast there. If you are listening to this and you're not a member of the Celebrant Institute, then I would heavily encourage you to join the Celebrant Institute as a paid member because I'm really proud of what we do there. We've got two levels of membership. We've got the old standard membership, which we've had around for, is it 6 years now? I think it's six years?
Yeah, something like that. One time.
That gives you access to everything we've ever written on the Celebrant Institute. And can I say one of my favorite things? Every week, there's at least one, if not two or three celebrants dive into the back catalog. I don't know if you see these emails, Sarah, and they'll start commenting on articles from like 5-6 years ago. It's awesome. So being a member gets you access to all the blog posts. Plus, you also get to go to celebrant.institute/ask. And ask a million questions or just one. And we're here to help. We have questions about marriage law, questions about running a business, social media, processes, forms, etc. We're here to help. We also have a new level of membership called Insights, where you get access to a new podcast, not this one. It's a members-only podcast where I interview people that are getting married or have gotten married and talk to them about the different processes they have in choosing a celebrant, choosing venue, budgeting, that kind of thing, so that when you're making marketing and business and process decisions, you're actually hearing from real people that have made real decisions and spent real money having a real wedding, as opposed to there's just a lot of people with something to say, and when they move their lips, nothing comes out except for a lot of gibberish. So we're on the podcast. Indeed. We started it. So, honestly, I'm really proud of the work I'm doing at Insights. I've got a bunch of podcasts getting lined up. And if you want to share that around with your couples, I'd love to interview your couples. Send them to celebrant.institute/interview because I'd love to interview members, couples as well. So please send them around. Please get into Insights. Please enjoy being a celebrant. If we can help, get a celebrant on Institute and ask away. Sarah, always a pleasure to hear your voice. Talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure. Bye.